Hello, Razor Podders, and welcome back for Season 2 of Razor Pod. We've got a more somber start of the season. We'll have lots to talk about tonight, including the outlook for the season. I'm Charlie Beach, and here's your host, Patrick Williams.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yay. Hello, and welcome to Season 2 of Razor Pod. We are excited to be back with you this year, and hopefully we'll crank it back up now that football season is on. But unfortunately, we're coming to you at a very sad time for the Razorback Nation. If we had done this show a week ago, I think all the talk would have been about the season and how excited we all were to see what the team was going to do this year. But in the last week or so, there's been two very significant events about the Razorback football team, and we'll get into both of those tonight, which sort of has put a damper on our outlook for the season. And of course, I'm speaking of, first and foremost, the death of the longtime radio announcer, voice of the Razorbacks, Paul Eel, last night in a tragic car accident on Interstate 40. And, of course, the Razorpod's thoughts and prayers are with Paul's family. We'll talk about some of the favorite calls we've had from Paul and just some of our memories of him tonight in the show. And then, of course, the second thing, more germane to the actual on-the-field, what's going to happen this year, is Darren McFadden completely being a moron and dislocating his big toe in a fight outside of a bar in Little Rock on Friday night. So those are the two big things, and then generally we're just going to talk about the season. Since this is the first show, we'll let you know kind of what we think this year is going to go like, and we'll maybe even look at a little bit of the schedule, key games, things like that, and then we're going to tell you what we're going to do in the next few weeks of Razor Pod, just to give you a look ahead. Next week's going to be the SEC East preview. We're going to hit the East first and give you our picks. And then the week after that, we're going to do the SEC West and, of course, tell you where we think the Razorbacks are going to finish. And then the last week of August, before the season actually starts, we're going to tell you our national picks. And if you're a Razor Pod fan, you'll remember from last year how much those national picks always came up every
sleeper
week.
Sleeper picks, too, they're my favorite.
And
my
national
favorites.
Sleeper picks, of course. And, you know, the year's going to, once we get started into the season, the show kind of does itself, we like to say here at Razor Pod. But here in this preseason, it's going to be a lot like the NFL preseason, you know. A little bit of substance, a lot of flare and flash, and you're going to see a lot of the draft picks. So that's what you're looking at. But tonight we are going to dwell for a little bit upon those two events. And first, guys, Paul Eels. Of course, I'm here with the usual Razor Pod crew back for Season 2. We haven't traded anybody, nor have we let anyone go to free agency.
The player will be named later.
Although Jimmy G has gone to arbitration and lost. Johnny Fayetteville, Jimmy G, Patrick Williams, of course, Tom Logan back here with the lovely Charlie Beach. Guys, Paul Eels, let's lead the show off there and hopefully get the sadness out of the way, and then we'll go on. Tom Logan, very tragic, tragic circumstance.
Yeah, it was, and we'll, I guess, never know why his vehicle drifted over the median and collided with the other vehicle, and our thoughts and prayers actually go out to them as well. I mean, there's more than one people with a loss in this whole incident. But yeah, you know, the thing about Paul, I wish I had an interesting story to relate, or a firsthand visit or talk or something that Paul had done for me, like so many around the state do. But it doesn't really stop me from feeling like I've suffered a personal loss, because he's who I associate with Razorback Athletics as much as almost anyone other than Frank Broyles. I mean, he's been there since I've been there. And so, you know, when you lose like something like that, it's, you do feel a little bit empty inside. And I know that when I hear whoever it is that's going to do the play-by-play football season for the first time, it's going to be a little different, and it's going to take some getting used to.
Jimmy G, any thoughts for Paul?
Yeah, he was a true legend. I think that everybody around the state, and I was talking off before we came on the air with Johnny, that, you know, a lot of people in this state, everybody knows it's a rural state, and we're fortunate enough to be able to afford to have tickets and go to games and live in Little Rock and gone to the university and been on campus during seasons. And but a lot of this state, you know, they don't get a chance to go to the games. A lot of them don't have cable television, so their only access to the Razorbacks pretty much for 8-9 games of a year is going to be through the Razorback Radio Network, or ARSN, and Paul Eels has been their eyes and ears for 28 years, I suppose, he's been calling Razorback football. And it's really it is a sad deal, and I hate that I'm not going to be able to turn on the radio the one or two games a year I listen to and hear his voice. And I don't like Scott. Tom, I wish I had a personal anecdote, and I may or may not have one. My parents have always said it was Paul Eels, but I vaguely remember we were down at the Sugar Bowl, and I recounted this in an email today, but I'll tell it to our three listeners. And we were down there at the team hotel, and we'd gone to the pep rally, and afterwards they were setting up, as they do, the pieces for the evening news to do an interview with some fans that had been there, and a reporter grabbed me and threw me on the air, and you know, we got done, and very nice man, and he said, you know, son, you'll probably be a future Razorback someday. And of course, my parents told me it was Paul Eels. Now, I don't know if it was or it wasn't, but
they're lying to you.
Right, they probably were, but that's okay. But as far as I know, it was Paul Eels, and I'm going to repeat the same joke. He's not much of a talent scout, but he certainly was a nice man, and he gave me a little Razorback football too. So if that was Ray Tucker, I apologize. My parents said it was
Paul.
So I'm going with that.
Johnny Fable, thoughts?
You know, I was Jimmy D has mentioned our conversation off air and mentioned that usually these outpourings of emotion and these demonstrations, like on Drive Time Sports and these call-in shows, usually kind of turn me off because I just think it's forced. You know, it's I don't know. It just seems a little bit too over the top, but I can really understand it with a guy like Paul Eels. I mean, because we can like it or not or agree or disagree, but a lot of people take football, college football, their alma mater, seriously, and they're emotional about it. And this is a guy who's been part of those great times. You know, the 1978 Orange Bowl was part of the 1995 last-minute game at Alabama, the redemption against Tennessee, these big important games, the game down in 1988 in the Orange Bowl. He's been against Miami. He's been part of these great games, but he's also been part of the bad ones.
U.S. Reed, remember?
U.S. Reed. He announced the U.S. Reed shot from half court with Rick Schaefer in 19. Is it 80 or 81? No, they won. No, it's 81 because Louisville won the championship in 80. And he's also been part of those really heartbreaking losses: the 98 Sternover, the. You know, there's been plenty, 70-17 against USC. There's been plenty of those losses. So he's part of those good and bad
memories. I don't know that I would call that one heartbreaking.
Well, demoralizing. It was bad no matter how you cut
painful.
It.
Painful.
Well, Eels is by far seen more of the painful, heartbreaking
sure.
losses than he did the thrilling wins and championships.
Well, that's because he was calling Razorback.
Right.
The championship is far between.
But he's been part of those games. And plus, he's been on the top-rated news program as a sports director for a quarter of a century. You know, everybody in the state had had him in their living rooms forever and ever. And he was always, and just taking apart the sports again from the personal, fantastic guy. No one ever had a bad word to say about him. He used to come in the store that we used to work, that my fraternity brothers and I used to work in college, buy something on game weekends. Always greet everybody with, "Hey, fellas, how you doing? We're going to get him this week." Just a pleasant man. Our hearts do go out to the other family, obviously, but it's a big loss. I mean, it's emotional because he was just very important to the program and just a fine gentleman all the way around. So it's a huge loss. You don't know if you want to talk about who's going to replace him, but there is talk about Chuck Barrett. It'll be a lot of big shoes to fill, but you know, time marches on. You got to move. You got to think ahead.
Well, and but probably more so than any other sport, a college football announcer is identified with the team.
Look,
really
the SEC.
Becomes part of the team. Yeah.
Wasn't it a couple of years ago that Auburn's longtime voice of radio, he died during the season, I believe.
Maybe
during their off week, he passed away. You know,
was it suddenly. Auburn? Or was it
South
Carolina?
It was Auburn because there was a lot of Auburn people posting saying, "We know what on the message boards. You know, we know what you're going through."
Okay.
So I assume that's what the case was.
Was it Clemson?
That was Auburn.
Okay,
all right. It was an SEC school. It was Auburn. Come on, Johnny.
You know, the thing about, like Johnny said, with the, you know, you always think, I'm with Johnny on this, whenever you have some of these days when someone famous dies, you're only able to listen or watch a few minutes because you think, well, they, you know, none of those people care.
Right.
And they're just being sensitive, oversensitive and that sort of thing. And you didn't get the sense that it was forced emotion, and you know, when somebody dies, you always hear, all you hear is the good, and and rightfully so. But, you know, with people like Paul Eales, who are truly good people, you hear the good because that's what they are. You hear genuine emotion. You don't hear anything forced. And you're going to continue to hear those same fond memories for the next 10 or 20 years from everybody that was associated with him. And that's a tribute to him more than his 30 years of excellent broadcast will ever be.
And yeah. Let's say one thing, though. I mean, when you're around for that long, for 30 years as a school, I know we used to clown on him a little bit because it was all he didn't paint a great picture with words all the time. I mean, sometimes my favorite joke is the Razorbacks have got him down to 20. Whoops, touchdown Tennessee. You know, yeah. He was always maybe a little step behind, but it was a joke more than it was a legitimate criticism. I mean, I couldn't imagine him not being on the mic, although I would clown on him sometimes, screwing the score up, or always, you know, the Tennessee player, put him to the 30, to the 31, he'll fall forward to the 39-yard line. These little things that you always pick up, having listened to him for so long, but, you know, it was out of fun, not out of, you know.
Well, I will relay in good Razor Pod fashion, complete hearsay, but if this is true, it's pretty sad. I've kind of heard this through a couple different sources that he actually called Steve Sullivan from Fayetteville and said, hey, how was my 6 o'clock live report? I don't remember doing it. I'm not feeling well. And he called him before, and Sullivan said, yeah, you know, just come on back. You know, we don't need you up there anymore. You know, you can just get back home and get checked in. That's the last anyone talked to him.
Well, to delve further into the double triple
hearsay. That's going way beyond anything we probably need to be getting into. Yeah. I'll say that, yeah. And I'll say, you know, along funny stories about Paul Eales that not that one was not funny, but the one that Johnny was telling about when he would announce, my big pet peeve with him, and like I said, it's all in good fun because he was really good at what he did, and you could tell he had a passion for Razorback football.
Oh, yeah.
And he wanted to help the Razorbacks in every way possible. So if we were on defense, he would have it, you know, he'd say quarterback hands off to running back for the South Carolina here we're playing, and he's up over the 30 to 30 and up over the 35-yard line. He's taken down, and he's at the 39. He would always, you know, he'd always say up over the 35, and then he'd throw their extra 4 yards on there like yep, they were nothing. Yep. Well, then with us, it's Cobb's got the ball at the 35, down to the 30, up over the 30-yard line, and he's down at the 29. Yeah. It was with the best of intentions, but it was always funny because you knew those little three yards in between weren't really important.
That's got to be intentional.
Yeah.
It had to be because he's on radio. People that are listening can't see the game. And he did that all the time.
But I think the point that Tom and Johnny made about him, all the good stuff coming out, with him, the tribute is, every time I would listen to call-in shows, while he was alive, people would call in and say these types of things.
Yeah, it's not
an after-the-fact that just because he's passed away now. It's this stuff was going on when he was alive. So that lets you know that he probably truly was a special individual. And best wishes to Paul's family and also the victim. Like, I want to express my condolences too, though I'm sure no one else is listening. But
sure. I mean, this poor lady who was in the other lane. You got to think about their family. How terrible that is. What a terrible loss.
Absolutely.
But I mean, you know, you do have to look forward, and you know, there's going to be somebody in the booth in 4.5 weeks.
I was asked if Keith Jackson would slide over to play-by-play today, and I had an emphatic no.
I hope not. I know this may not. It may be a little early. I mean, well, you got to think about it. I mean, I've heard Chuck Barrett's name, and I think Chuck would do a pretty good job. He's got a good radio voice. Loves Razorbacks,
and he can kiss Houston Nutt's rear end with the best.
He loves Houston Nutt's.
If we can get back to the stuff I like talking about,
yeah. Well, who's right in your wheelhouse?
Who would be the other name?
I think for this year, since he was already on the ARSN crew and he kind of was the third voice in the booth last year to defend Houston Nutt all the time, that he's probably the logical choice. Now, they may actually do a search after this season to see if somebody else they might be able to get, but I think for this season.
I think you're in a good position here if you're ASRN in that, and this is only not because Paul died, obviously, just because it's on the business side of it. You can basically hire somebody on a temporary basis and say, give them an internship for a year and see how they do. And if they don't, move on and no hard feelings. And if they do well, stick with them.
It's almost a better situation than if he were to announce his retirement.
Like everyone said,
this was going to be his last.
It's kind of like the head coach that resigns a month before practice starts. Right. Like John Thompson retired from Georgetown because it gives his assistant a chance to have an audition for a year. Yeah. similar types. I think you're what you're saying. You get like Chuck Barrett do it. I mean, that's what I'm assuming. I've heard
all kinds of different things. I think one of the rumors I heard is that when Steve Sullivan moved from NBC to ABC, one of the promises that were made to him was he was going to be the next play-by-play man, which I certainly don't want because he used to be the voice of the Arkansas State Indians and did a terrible job. I would like to see Scott Inman, who is the lead anchor and who does the halftime show, get his shot because I think he's got a great voice. He's very calm. He seems knowledgeable. And I've heard he does a great play-by-play. So I'd like to see him get it.
That sounds like it's probably a tougher job than we give him credit for. I know we always clown on the announcers, but
think about it, 3.5-4 hours whenever a football game lasts. I mean,
the thing about Paul's voice, I know we're probably going to reminisce the old things about Paul. What he was really good about was kind of capturing the bit of nostalgia about being at the stadium when he was on the air. Oh, it's a crisp, cool evening here at War Memorial Stadium. The leaves are turning out on the golf course. The weather's a little bit cool. Those little things like that. I mean, you know, being from Arkansas and knowing where he's talking about, I thought that was pretty valuable, pretty good.
He always put it. I thought he always gave it an appropriate level of excitement. You know, he would never get so excited that it was you couldn't understand him except like Rick Schaefer. But he did, you know, he went with the game and he used inflection appropriately, and that's not easy.
Although I do have some favorite calls.
Well, and he didn't have the, the shtick like a lot of the ESPN.
Yeah, right.
The ESPN guys they're celebrities more than the games they're calling.
Yeah.
And he did have a trademark phrase, but his trademark phrase was simply touchdown Arkansas. I mean.
It wasn't give him six or put it on the board, you know, good guys coming up or something stupid like that. It was simple, yeah. It wasn't a shtick. That's a good point.
It wasn't I'm not going to say it because I heard it on the radio. I'm not going to copy it, but I think we all know what Stu Scott says all the time, and that kind of garbage.
Well, guys, let's move now to football and talk about one of the other big story this week. Is Darren McFadden with a dislocated big toe, which sounds pretty innocent if you just say dislocated big toe, but apparently 2 hours of surgery at University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences plus a pin in his toe. So it must have been severely dislocated. of course, the circumstances are what bothers everybody at this point, that he was out at 4:30 a.m. outside of a notoriously dangerous bar, got in a fight with someone trying to steal his car. I mean, the whole thing is just seedy as heck. And, you know, A, what was he doing there? He's got to be smarter than that. And more to the point, I guess, is this season and how is it going to affect us until he comes back? And then generally, you know, why do our players seem to do this every year? There's always somebody who is a world beater their first year, and then they just turn into... They just can't keep out of trouble, and I don't know why it is. But anyway, let's talk about the football implications. Johnny Fayetteville first.
Oh, per Rick Schaefer, no drop-off. No drop-off. It must show what Peyton Hillis can do. He's such a dynamic player. What a bunch of crap. Look, you won't find five bigger Darren McFadden fans and the guys in this room. He's the best player in the league, in my opinion, and one of the best in the country. Felix Jones is a nice player. He's probably a top 5 or 6 back in the league, but he's not McFadden. And there is going to be a drop-off on the football sense. He averaged 6.5 yards a carry. He's a beast blocking on kickoffs. He catches the ball out of the backfield, and that guy will lay a lick on a linebacker. He will carry you in. He's just a great player. And just focusing on the football part of it, it hurts us. I don't see how it doesn't hurt us. Now, yes, we have Felix Jones. All accounts, Michael Smith has been really playing well in practice, kind of a Fred Talley type. Peyton Hillis is a good fullback. It's going to hurt us football-wise. But Jimmy G made a good point, and this is something that we're going to have to – that I don't have an answer to. But you have to know everybody on that team knew that that's the guy. You know, Mitch Mustaine is the big hot recruit. You know, Casey Diggle probably our starting quarterback starting out, but the big guy, the number one guy on the team is McFadden. How does that affect you mentally? Like, you know, because everything I think is geared up for us to have a pretty good season. We've got a good defense back, a lot of talent coming back, and our schedule sets up. I think everyone, it kind of reminds me like 03 and maybe even 98 when kind of quietly, we're never going to be picked first in the league, ever.
But we're in 99 and wound up 4-4.
Right. But I think everybody's kind of thought, everyone kind of thought like in 98 and 03, we got a chance to be pretty darn good this year.
Well, you know, and
how does that affect us mentally? That's a good question.
Well, I think a good thing is we'll get a chance to practice without him. And I think Felix Jones and Michael Smith and Hillis and the other backs will be okay. I mean, they're
Hezekiah Smith, you forgetting about him?
Hezekiah.
Yeah. they're probably relishing this opportunity. But the problem's going to be the other 80 scholarship players that are like, gosh dang, you know, we lose Darren McFadden before the season even starts. And obviously we don't know how long he's going to be out. So I'm just talking USC game right here and maybe Utah State, which shouldn't matter anyway. But
all indications are what I've heard is he could be back for Alabama, which, I mean, that's great. If that's the case, and, you know.
I believe it when I see it.
If he can make that recovery, that's 2 full months.
But you will not have gone through any preseason drills. You're not in shape. You're not in football shape. I believe when I see it.
I think that one of the biggest impacts, too, is also going to be what the implications this is going to have for Malzahn's offense, because even if he does come back by the Alabama game and is completely healthy, not going through fall drills and not going through practice of the first 3 games, they're not going to be able to do some of the things they wanted to do with McFadden, like splitting him out, getting him and Jones on the field at the same time, because Jones isn't going to be there to learn those plays. And you certainly don't want to start implementing those plays, a full package of them, during game weeks before you play big SEC games. You might want to maybe one play or something, but you're not going to be able to do the whole offense that Malzahn certainly had in mind. And so I hope that'll hinder what he wants to do a little bit. And I know that I'm from Northwest Arkansas, and I'm part of the cult up there of Malzahn. But I just think that's going to be a big impact, too, what kind of plays we can run with him. And I was really looking forward to seeing him and Felix Jones on the field at the same time.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, we have to also look at it from this point of view, Tom Logan. Can Felix Jones, Peyton Hillis do the job? And the part that I want you to talk about is, does it really matter if the quarterback situation doesn't resolve itself?
Well, I think that those are two different questions, because the quarterback position is obviously critical. We had McFadden all last year, but we had an ineptitude at quarterback. We had an inept passing game. We had inept play calling. And that all translated to 4 wins. So, and McFadden was a monster from, you know, the Alabama game on. So, obviously, you're going to have a quarterback that steps up and plays. The difference, and this, you know, the only possible bright side to this deal is the only time McFadden was taken away from the offense last year was in the Ole Miss game, and it actually forced Houston to call some passes, and Casey Dick made some plays. So maybe, if you're looking at the eternal optimist viewpoint, like Johnny Fayetteville normally does, you say, you know, we never want to lose McFadden, but this does give you an opportunity to not just say, let's hand it to the Hoss and let him take over the game, like you would have been tempted to do, and like Houston did 7 or 8 games last year. I mean, because he was always hoping for that 70-yard run that he got in 2 games. And so, you know, we need the quarterback to step up, and that maybe that'll force his hand and make Malzahn. I mean, Malzahn, I don't have any problem with him. He's going to get everybody involved. I think with who this helps as much as it does Felix Jones, I really think Damian Williams is going to step up from Springdale more. He's going to step up in the role that McFadden would normally take, split out. You're going to see him because he's a natural running back. That's what Malzahn says, at least, and he's, you know, allegedly running the offense. So, you know, I think this may work into Damian Williams' benefit as much as it does Peyton Hillis or any of the other second tier backs. Obviously, Felix Jones is going to get more carries.
Jimmy G, let me serve this one right up to you. Lack of institutional control, Houston nut. These players getting worse, getting in trouble every year. Just take it and go.
Well, I mean, it's a problem. Nutt has his teams have exhibited through arrest warrants,
fights,
academic problems, fights.
I mean, DWIs.
Drugs.
Well, I thought all that was included under arrest warrants, but
guns.
Sure, guns, drugs, money. I mean, we all remember the Jermaine Brooks incident.
Razorback bells.
Yeah.
No hookers, though, right?
Well, whatever you want to call the Razorback bells, but. It's just been a complete
ouch. That's gonna leave a mark.
It's been just a whole mess of stuff ever since he's taken over, and there's never been an end to it. And even this year, you thought we were gonna get through the off season pretty much unscathed, and then a week before practice starts, obviously one of the biggest incidents to occur during Houston Nutt's tenure. And I don't think I'm going exactly where you want me to go, because I'm not really going to blame this one on Nutt, because this was in the summer. Most of their kids get a break after their voluntary workouts are all through. They go home. I just don't think there's a lot they can do other than, and I'm sure they warned them. Now, I'm dubious of the three supposed text messages that Houston and Danny sent Darren McFadden on Friday about not getting in trouble. That sounds a little fishy to me.
Yeah.
So
revisionist history is what I call
that
it.
That I'm not putting any stock in. But as far as blaming him for McFadden being out there, because I'm, as much as I dislike Nutt, as much as I want to fire him for this incident, and I would still be fine if we did, I would say, he knew, he had warned McFadden, as he had warned all the players about getting in situations like this. He'd probably had the buddy system in effect, and according to Wally Hall's article, McFadden wasn't the only Razorback player out at the Palace that night. And these buddy system deals, get these guys out of there. And all reports are that people had told McFadden to get out of there. People at the club had told McFadden to get out of there. They were trying to get him out of there, and he didn't go. And this has got to really be fall on the player. And as most of these incidents ultimately comes down to the player, but I think as a coach, Nutt has not done the job in instilling the discipline in his players, and he hasn't done a good job of disciplining players that got involved in these kind of incidents. And I think until you put your foot down, you're going to keep having these problems, and kind of like Fulmer at Tennessee. And we'll see what happens in the next couple of years. And, of course, we always said that in his whole 9 years here, and nothing ever changes.
Very, very good point. Okay, guys, let's sort of move into what are we going to look at this season, just briefly.
Can I make a little quick comment about McFadden, though?
Sure.
At some point, I agree with Jimmy G that you have to have personal responsibility, but this is not the first pro prospect, believe it or not, that Nutt has had. And you've got to think that after you tell someone and sit down with him, I'm sure he's done it and said, look, Darren, in a year and a half, you're probably going to be a multimillionaire. Because he is. The pro scouts love him. They're drilling over him already. He's going to be a top pick when he's eligible to come out in the draft. At some point, you've got to say, look, I am different. And I can't, I've got too much to lose. It's got to be on the player. I understand that Nutt makes you get a little criticism. He's the head coach. At the end of the day, it's his name on the dotted line. But that player has got to realize, look, there's something else here going on here, and I've got something to lose. And the only thing I've got to do is stay healthy and stay out of trouble. And it's on him, man. It's a bad decision all the way around.
And we get on him, but it's a 19-year-old kid.
You know what? It's not that easy. I understand he isn't 18 years. He's not even 19 yet. He's 8 turns 19 August 27th. But his life's different. I'm sorry, and that's just the way it is. And I'm
are you a stalker?
It's
impressive.
It was in the paper, and I read. And I'm a reader. I like to read books and magazines and papers. But, his life's different.
Internet.
His life.
26 shopping days. Yeah. Right?
His life is different than other people. It is. And that's the facts.
Okay, guys. Back to where we were going. Just briefly, because we want to keep this one short for our lead-off podcast. Season.
I don't think anyone's going to complain if we go 6 hours.
Well, because no one's going to be listening.
I will complain.
Well, first of all, I'm at home at Studio Jimmy G, so I would be asleep already.
Plenty of beer in the skybox.
Season. What are we looking at? You know, obviously everyone's optimistic. It's summer. We're before practice. Only a few bad things have happened.
Yeah, we just lost our best player.
Yeah.
That's basically going along smoothly.
Four two-a-days. So anyway, what's going to happen this year? What do we think? Just generally, Tom Logan, bowl game or no? Let's throw that question out there.
I think bowl game, yes. My hope for the season has been tempered by McFadden's potential loss for a third of it. So I'm not going to give you my prediction for the score.
Don't want you to do
record
that.
Right,
just,
now. That's a little too much. Let's leave that bait dangling for the listeners.
He knew.
But, you know, I think we will sneak into a bowl game. And I will say this, that I don't think that we're going to see the Malzahn spread at any point this year.
Wow. Interesting prediction.
Other than maybe an isolated play or two. We will never see the spread offense. It's possible that we will see an occasional spread play.
Let me follow up one last question. Which bowl game?
Liberty.
If you had to pick.
Liberty
Bowl. Jimmy G.
I'm going to hold off on my bowl projection and prediction until we actually do our Razorback season predictions, but I am going to say a couple of general things about the season. I agree with what Tom just said. We're not going to see the Malzahn spread offense that he ran at Springdale High, and certainly we're not going to see the five wide spread that he ran at Shiloh Christian. But what we will see is a whole lot of Casey Dick and Robert Johnson. I don't think Mustang's going to get much playing time. I hope I'm wrong. And I hope he gets a lot of playing time. I just think Nutt is going to be too scared to turn the reins over to a true freshman while there's still a chance the season could result in something. Because he didn't turn it over last year to Casey Dick until it was too late. So I don't think he's going to let Mustang get anything going until he's already cemented a losing record or his job's already gone. So that's one of my dour predictions for the season. Positive projection, I think Sam Olajabutu is going to be unless he gets hurt, which is certainly capable of happening during 2-a-days. He's going to probably be an All-SEC Defensive Player of the Year candidate and probably, hopefully, a finalist for the Buckus Award. I think he's that good and has that much of an impact. And I really look for big things out of our defense. I think they may provide a lot of exciting moments for us that we haven't seen from our defense in the past. I really like the direction our defense is going, providing we don't have injuries on defense. Our depth is not great on that side of the ball. So if we start losing players over there like we've already started losing on offense, it's a lot more troublesome because our depth is not near as good there as it is offensively.
Johnny Fable.
I totally agree with what Jimmy G said about the defense. We've never had D-line depth, so injuries there would hurt us immensely. But if you look at putting Jamal Anderson, Marcus Harrison, Keith Jackson, and maybe rotating Anthony Thompson, Marcus Shavers in that other D-line spot, that's as talented a line as we've had under Nutt maybe ever, having been able to get pressure with your front four makes your defense that much better. I think Elijah Butu is going to be great, and I think we're going to see finally, after two rough years, improvements with our defensive backs. And it's like a synergy on your defense. You get pressure with your front four, it's amazing how good your D-backs look. When your D-backs are good, you know, they cover people up, it's amazing how often your defensive line gets a sack. So I think we're going to see quite an improvement. And I think moving Desmond Sims to linebacker, where he's naturally more, you know, that's really his position.
Where I said he should have been moved at the beginning of Razorpod 1.
And you were 100% right. But look at Elijah Butu, who I think should be a Buckus finalist, even at 5'9". He, Desmond Sims, and Freddie Fairchild, who I think heard gained about 20 pounds of muscle over the summer. He played a lot of
Transformers. We'll see how that translates.
Transformer got home, but I think
into broken ankle.
But I think that looks good for our defense. On the offensive side of the football, we've talked about how I think we'll be a good running team, not as great if McFadden can't play. I think the freshman receivers are going to be a very important key because obviously by signing seven receivers in one class, you're saying we don't have any receivers on campus except Cedric Washington and Marcus Monk. So
what about Cedric Logan?
Well, apparently he's not going to play much. He's not even on the 2-deep. I can't believe Jimmy G and I are agreeing so much. I'm scared that Houston's going to see this season as, boy, just don't screw up too bad and not play Mustang. Is Casey Dick really the answer? If so, why did we wait till the eighth game to play him? I think you have more upside playing Mustang like Leek did, like Schaefer did at UT, letting him learn. Maybe not from the very first down against USC, but not giving him three snaps for the first six games. If you're going to do that, don't even bother. Let the kid learn or not.
Houston is.
And I'm afraid he's going to hold him out thinking, boy, if Casey can just do okay and we win some games, I'll be okay. But I don't want to take too big a chance with Mustang. How good could we run the football? We said this at our summer meetings at beautiful Lake Catherine. How good would our running game be if we get 200 vertical passing yards? How good could we run the ball?
We'll never know.
Well,
here's why. Because to go to a bowl game, Houston has to beat Mississippi, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and three scrubs, including one double-A team. That's all he has to do. And I guarantee you what he's thinking right now. He's got McFadden down. All he's thinking is, if I can gut out six or seven wins, and get a chance to beat a mediocre Big 12 team in the Shreveport Bowl or the Conference USA champ in the Liberty Bowl and get it to eight wins, I am home free. If I can get to seven, I'm probably home free, because it's going to be hard to fire somebody who goes to a bowl game and then you didn't fire him in two losing years, and then he goes to a bowl game and his program's on the upswing again. You gonna fire him then?
Big recruits, yeah. No
way. Yeah, but yeah, you can sell that it's on the upswing. But if you're 6-6
with
those kinds of wins, and then you beat Southern Miss or East Carolina or whatever crap bag CUSA team you play in Memphis, honestly, can you say that's improvement? I mean,
I don't. Think we all agree on that, but I agree with the PR side.
Houston's been selling it to this same line of crap for years.
I agree, and I think that is the major problem with our program right now. That line of thinking is what will get him another season, and I agree with what you're saying, but it's just that shouldn't be the standard for our administration, and I don't understand why the board of trustees would say, hey, Frank, this is okay. This is what we want. This is why we built these facilities. This is why we've raised millions upon millions of dollars so we can do this. And I think we all know what Nutt's track record is, and I'm rolling way off into my anti-Houston Nutt, but I'm just going to say that's unacceptable. Well, but I agree with Tom and Johnny that if we do get back to a ball game, it'll probably save the job.
I think that's going to affect personnel decisions, especially early, because you got to think he's going to sit there thinking, boy, if I play Mustang, he might make some mistakes, and boy, we really need to win this Vanderbilt game and this Alabama game, and gosh, too many turnovers by a quarterback, but probably not gonna win. It's gonna affect how he calls plays or how he makes personnel decisions.
I think the very earliest you would see Mustang get significant minutes is Auburn.
Why bother then?
Because you're gonna say no. I mean, but this is against USC. We're gonna get beat a lot against USC, and you're probably not going to put him in there except maybe in mop-up time, because you just don't want to get him in there and get him roughed up. You know, that's what he's going to say. Then at Utah State, you're going to get some mop-up time in that. Against Vandy, we're going to go into the freaking freezer. We're going to be handed it off. We're going to win that game 17-3.
On the road.
And then they're going to come back to Alabama, same offense, same conservative offense. And then at Auburn, if we lose, especially if we lose to Alabama, then if we play Auburn and we're getting throttled like we're going to get throttled anyway, and there's no real shame in going to Auburn and getting beat. I mean, they're really good. Then I think maybe at that point he'll say, if Dick hadn't done it, Johnson hadn't done it. I can't imagine. I don't care how good an offseason he had. We've seen
Johnson
he's not
a
game player. John Johnson, yeah.
Nice.
Maybe Gerald Howard will come in. But I don't care how good an off season he had. We saw the man perform a whole year, and so I think the earliest we would see Mustang get significant minutes is against Auburn. If he performed well then maybe he'd get the start the next game.
My prayer with Mustang: play him or redshirt him. I mean, seriously, make a decision. But I think you're 100% right. I mean, even down to the game, I agree with you. But that, I think that is a complete – that's a loser way of thinking.
Well,
you're talking about Houston.
Well, I'm just saying.
That's enough said.
play him or say, look, you're not ready. That's the thing. But if Casey Dick comes out against USC, throws 275 yards, 3 touchdowns, well, hell, that'd be great. Yeah. Makes your decision a little easier. But I don't think anyone's really expecting that to happen, are they?
I think I'm going to walk into a pot of gold at the end
of the game. Yeah, well, hey, the funny thing about that is he could do that, and we could still get beat by like 50 points.
Exactly.
Casey Dick, that's the thing. Nice player. I'm not quite sure that he is a big-time SEC quarterback yet. He had some good games last year. Second half against Ole Miss, threw for 3 touchdowns, about 200 yards.
That was his good game.
That was his good game.
He played one good game last
year. And then the first half against Mississippi State, he played pretty well. But that's a bad team. You got to think.
We beat them by 50?
Yeah. You know, he managed the game well against LSU. We were in that game, and, you know, he did make some plays to keep us in that game.
He did?
Really?
What plays were those?
Fourth down.
That was Darren McFadden
on the
completed pass.
Well, then he threw that one. He threw a 60-yard pass to Marcus Monk, and that was because LSU's going, they can throw the ball. And they're looking around going, what's going on? And Marcus Monk is just strolling back behind their defense. I mean, I hate to make fun of the kid. I'm just not.
Well, he was a true freshman.
He was.
I mean, he was a young. And I will say this about Casey Dick. He is tough, and he will hang in the pocket.
Oh, I think he can be a type player.
Why is everyone in our media and our coaching staff so quick to point out Mustang's a true freshman? You can't expect him to come in and play. He's 100 times more heralded and 100 times more naturally talented than Casey Dick.
Right.
So why was Casey Dick ready to play his true freshman year? But Mustang, there's no way he'll be
ready. The thing is that about Mustang is that how many first team snaps – or not Mustang, but Casey Dick. How many first team snaps do you think he got a week before the South Carolina
game?
Zero. But we were okay with throwing him out there because that's how bad Robert Johnson was playing. I mean, that's
scout team until
he was scout team. He wasn't getting any first team snaps
because I don't remember. It was the week before we went to Georgia, but when he was thinking about playing Alex Mortensen, saying he was going to start Alex Mortensen.
Yeah,
right.
And the week after that, Alex Mortensen was out of the picture, and it was Casey Dick who we were going to start against South Carolina.
Yeah,
out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You know, the quarterback is not going to he'll name Casey Dick the starter. There's no doubt in my mind. He'll do it about August 18th, 20th, after a couple weeks of practice, but before media days or fan day or whatever, he'll name a quarterback. It'll be Casey Dick for the SC game, and we'll see how he does.
Okay, guys. One last point, just to open it up for anyone who wants to say something. SEC media days, we all read Houston's transcript, and none of us, unfortunately, got our media passes in time to make it down to Hoover for the media day. So,
right.
You know, sorry your friendly internet Razor Pod wasn't there to be on site, but we did read all the transcripts. And so, you know, Houston Post was put some very direct questions about Malzahn and how Malzahn and he are interacting and the response to Jimmy G was less than encouraging for those of us who harbor conspiracy theories that Houston is not going to turn over responsibility to Malzahn.
You're right. I don't think he is going to turn over responsibility to Malzahn. Everything that he said, they asked him first question about Malzahn. He talked about Alex Woods' resume. Then they asked him about play calling. He said Malzahn will call plays, but first, before he said that, he started off with, it's a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, you know, thing with everybody contributing. Where it's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. We got 3 plays on 3rd and 3. 3 plays on 3rd and 8. We got 3 plays on 2nd and 7.
That's not hard to plan for.
3 plays 1st and 10. That's what you do. It's everybody all throughout the week. What does that mean? You know, I mean, it's more of the same where he doesn't, if anything appears to get more attention than he gets, it's not good. Same with McFadden. I mean, same with Mustang. All these big name players. The coach, like Malzahn, is getting the attention. His ego can't handle it. So, I don't look for Malzahn to get as much control of that offense as they would lead you to believe if you just read between the lines. And I think we're all Razorback and Houston nut savvy enough to see that. And that's my take on that.
Okay.
My take on it is this:
we'll know by halftime of the USC game. Because if it's a fairly close game, you'll probably see a little bit more of a Malzahn-esque offense. But you know that Houston's going to freak out if we're getting killed, or let's say maybe not even the USC game. But if it's very close at halftime of the Vanderbilt game, nut right back to three straight counter trays on second and one against South Carolina. You know that's going to happen.
Tom Logan, thoughts?
I really have nothing to add. You are not going to see next year Gus Malzahn's offense. And Houston Nutt has all but said it. I mean, he's come out. I mean, he has said Malzahn will call the plays, which I believe that that's probably somewhat accurate. And but the deal is, whose plays is he going to call? And the plays he's going to call are the offensive staffs on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And there's going to be some small components of the spread to keep Malzahn happy. And then the rest of the time, Houston's going to be saying, you know, look, we got to keep these games close. We've still got an inexperienced quarterback. We still have inexperienced wide receiver. We don't have our best running back now. That's what you're going to see. Not much spread.
All right. Well, we are back. Glad to be with you again. Razor Pod, season number 2. You can email us, same email. RazorPod@sbcglobal.net.
Keep the emails rolling.
Keep the emails rolling. The blog still exists. They didn't kick us off the blogosphere. So
what's the website?
If I remember that, it's RazorPod.
Just for the readers, just for the listeners' information, no, not for the hosts.
RazorPod.blogspot.com.
That's easy.
Yeah. We redid the blog.
Yeah, I think I will.
There's lots of stuff on there, and all the hosts can post, supposedly, so they can put their own posts on there, and you can respond and comment just like real blog.
And guys, we email each other every day anyway on a regular email list. Let's not worry about doing it on the blog. Oh, sorry.
For yourself, Jimmy G. Anyway, please give us your comments. Give us your emails. We love to read them, and if you'll email us, you'll probably make it on the air. We really don't have much of a editorial cutoff there, so
or a fan following.
We did. You know, we started off well last year, and then we gradually lost our audience as the year went along. And I don't know why that would be. Do want to alert you to our
imagine.
The length of the show's content.
Do want to alert you to our affiliation with the SEC Podcast Network, which those guys are getting everybody kicked up again about this time, too.
Wow. Sorry. It's joking.
Jimmy G not going to be invited to the tea party.
We're all having a good time here.
SEC Podcast parties.
Anyway, so check out their website, which is linked to from our blog. So, because I don't know it, I'll just say go to our blog, and then you can get to the SEC Podcast Network.
Project around here.
But they do have links to all the podcasts for the SEC that are on there. So that's it for RazorPod this week. We'll see you next week with the East preview, and here's Charlie.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in for our season opener, and don't forget to join us next week for our SEC East preview.